Hey, this is Tom Hamilton from Ghostlight, and Joe Russo's Almost Dead.
Yo, this is Philip Lassiter.
Hey, Russell Lawton here from the Transstadio Band and Sole Monday.
And you're listening to...
You're listening to
Galaxy Jams React.
It is time. Well, sometimes you think this day couldn't get any better, but then you just happen upon this great endeavor. It's another episode of Galaxy Jams Reacts, where we listen to handpicked and fan-picked music. I am EJ, here with my partner in crime, Mike.
So excited.
And our wonderful co-host, Kai.
Thank you.
And, of course, with us tonight is the great Tom Hamilton Jr., guitarist for Ghostlight, Joe Russo's Almost Dead, American Babies, Electron, and Billy and the Kids. Welcome to the show, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, dude. I'm absolutely great.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Tom. You know, you're such a fascinating guitar player in that you're able to play in many different places and, you know, really fit yourself into the mold of what you're doing. And we have so many questions that we just want to ask you. But first, we really want to know, Tom Hamilton Jr., what did you have for lunch today?
I had an amazing breakfast sandwich with Korean fried chicken on top of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's this place that's right by my studio that is just fucking awesome.
What else was on that sandwich aside from that? Was there any other fixings on it?
Yeah, it was scrambled eggs and a pepper ketchup type of thing.
Spicy.
That's bougie.
Yeah, that's not bougie as hell.
It is definitely a bougie cafe. I'm not going to lie.
That sounds delicious.
And on a potato roll.
That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, that sounds really good. What did you have for lunch, Kai?
I had some carbonara, like pasta carbonara, so the Alfredo with the bacon and all that stuff. But I only had like a small thing.
Yeah, there's egg in that too.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. There is.
Sounds yummy.
Yeah, that's a heavy lunch.
It's though. A very heavy. That's why I could
sounds
only
like
have,
a brick wall.
I could only have half of the thing because I would be asleep for the rest of forever. Yeah. So. How about you, Mike? What'd you have?
I had sushi. And I had that like clear soup, and then I got those like tapayaki balls, like the octopus. I think
takoyaki.
I just butchered that. Yeah. And then I had this like a tuna roll, and then a tuna avocado roll.
Ooh,
I like keeping it simple,
nice and creamy.
Yeah. What about you, EJ? What'd you have?
Well, I had a couple of hot dogs. I went to the famous Uncle Al's route,
really?
And so I had a New York dog, had spicy mustard and onion sauce on it.
Ooh,
it's delicious.
Good.
And I want a little bit of tang, so I got the Boston dog, spicy mustard, and sauerkraut.
Were you looking at your phone to like?
I had to write it down. I'm
what
old.
You had.
I don't have a brain anymore.
You know,
I ruined it back in a
hey
long
guys,
time ago.
Question: Is this a bit that we do every week? We talk about what we ate for lunch.
Yeah, yep. Because we want to see what's okay. Powering this conversation,
yeah.
Tom.
What fuels?
We want
it.
To see what's keeping this conversation going.
I'm totally good with it. I was just making sure because if that wasn't the case, the amount of foresight that it took for EJ to write down what he had for lunch
oh my
would have been fucking amazing.
I do it every day.
He has to tell. He has
I got
to
remember
his
what
journal.
He has to tell his handler.
Yeah, I have to tell my handler what I had for lunch. I write it down every day of the week.
Tom, I like the fact that you picked up on that yeah. He would have to actually
so
think that
good.
Far.
I've been doing it since 1982.
Yeah, he has a list.
You just have reams, like a Trapper Keeper from fucking
oh
93.
God.
Yep, yeah. Trapper Keeper.
Like the cast 90210 on it, but it has all your lunch
well,
in there. Well,
I did the cool thing where I sliced the top and put my own drawings in it.
Yeah. You know, I actually like saw that documentary about that guy that's eaten like the most amount of Big Macs. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's this guy that's eaten like a million Big Macs, literally, and he keeps like this solid Rolodex of all the receipts of every
oh
Big Mac that he
God.
Eats. Every single day. I don't know if you guys know about that.
I didn't know that.
All right.
I had no idea.
So, well, you guys got to look him up because, you know, he's my best friend. So, so we're so excited to be listening to music together. We
yes.
have a lot of great hand-picked and fan-picked requests. Yep. So why don't we just jump right into it? So today's first pick is a fan request from Tim Palmieri from Lotus.
Yeah. Hey, Timmy.
Yeah. And
okay.
So I know that I started listening to your music when you were in Brothers Past, and you know, they such a good solid jamtronica, almost indie band, you know, put those two genres together, which I really appreciated. And I know that Lotus ran in those same circles. And so Tim says, we're going to be listening to a artist by The Free Design, and this is their song Bubbles. So Tim says that he chose this song, Bubbles, to keep it light and show vocal harmonies, and it also it gives some complexity rhythmically and hopefully blows your mind with late 60s pop brilliance. Tim says that he was blown away upon first hearing this track, and he still is every single time. So we're going to be listening to the 1998 album Kites Are Fun. This is The Free Design with their song Bubbles right here on Galaxy Jams Reacts.
Out of the window, chewing bubble gum and blowing big bubbles, getting rid of all of my troubles, watching the tadpoles, glubber glubber in the bottle. Soap bubbles get my jeans up high, bubble gum kinda keeps my heart from getting heavy and crying.
Whoa.
Bubble gum kinda keeps my heart from getting heavy and crying. My pa are arguing again.
My best friend,
the kid has a little cold,
and grandpa is getting old.
My tummy has a little pain when does Jesus come again?
Blowing bubbles out of the window, chewing bubble gum and blowing big bubbles, getting rid of all of my troubles, watching the tadpoles, glubber glubber in the puddles.
Some bubbles keep my dreams up high,
bubble gum kinda keeps my heart from getting heavy and crying.
Wow, I've already liked this song because it's so bubbly and it lives up to its name. I, you know, this reminds me of like one of those artists that were like on a variety show in the 60s.
Right.
Mm. That's what it sounds like. Came out in 1998, but even the design that we're looking at here, it looks like
has a 60s vibe.
Looks like a bubblegum band.
Mm-hmm. What I really like about the vocals is that a lot of people, when they try and do fun stuff with multiple vocals and, mm-hmm. and harmonies and things like that, they generally like stack them on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And what I really like that the Free Design did with this is like they kind of went all over the place. So not only is it really interesting, you know, harmonies in terms of the notes, but the placement of like all the sounds and things like that really lended itself to a really, really nice distinct sound. And also it reminds me a lot of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Yeah,
because I guess what they're trying to go for, at least King Gizzard is like that like 60s garage band psychedelic thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that this band isn't trying to go for that as well.
Yeah.
What did you think, Kai?
I liked it a lot. Of course, as soon as vocal harmonies hit, I'm usually in it. But like you said, Mike, the vocal harmonies are unique, and not only because they were stacked like kind of right after one another, but the actual choice of notes. They weren't using like,
right.
like normal chromatic
really off
stuff.
The beaten path.
Yeah, like very dissonancy. So when that hit, I was kind of like, oh. That's pretty cool. What did you think, Tom?
I think it's cool. It's funny. It's like stealthily, like proggy. You know,
right.
like the time signature isn't straight. You know, yeah. it's very like I don't know what. You know, I'm not gonna like nerd out and count it, but it's definitely something crooked that you can't. You know, it's like you try to like dance to it, you'll break your leg. You know, I feel like that's kind of. I don't know. I wonder if that's like a tongue-in-cheek thing on their end, you know, because it's like, hey, we're going to take this thing that is that this general aesthetic that 60s, very easily digestible thing, but we're going to make it an odd time. Mm. You know, it's right. like, we'll give you something pleasing, but we're also going to make you work for it a little bit, you know, and I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's a really good point because I feel like when people do prog rock, it's really, really easy to like essentially be like hyper self-indulgent about it. And then like you go down this rabbit hole and then in turn you lose your audience because you're just kind of doing this like self-masturbatory stuff where you do weird time signatures and things like that. But I think that what they're doing is like something that's complicated but also really palatable. And it's really, really difficult to do that, especially when you kind of have this like backdrop of like 1960s pop essentially.
You know, I feel like that to dance to this song, on your point, Tom, I do believe that you should have a go-go cage and white boots.
Yeah.
It's the only way you'd survive.
Yeah. That's no, it seems crazy. And also, it's almost like theatrical. Like, it sounds like Broadway, almost, you know?
Like a TV show.
Yeah, it has, like, Age of Aquarius, you
know?
Yeah, definitely
like, you know, something from, like, Hair or, you know? Jesus Christ Superstar, like that whole era of stuff. So, and this was from 98, you said?
1998.
Yeah, which I think makes it even more interesting.
It's definitely.
Yeah, it's but you know, it's interesting because in 1998, these weren't popular production choices in 1998.
By no means.
Like, you know, like now most things are trying to sound like a, you know, a long ago time. Most things are trying to sound like, at, you know, even the 90s, you know, but let alone the 60s, 70s, you know, like everything Dan Auerbach does sounds like it's like in like 1974, you know, like that type of thing. But like in the late 90s, that wasn't really what was going on in music, you know, like things were still kind of on a forward momentum. So it's interesting that this is so like time specific sounding at a time when that wasn't really
the thing. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. And then also, I really like how they're able to do that without typical gimmicks that people do now, like putting like lo-fi, you know, on everything and making everything sound fuzzy, or putting like that tape hiss or like the record popping, right? I don't really hear any of that here. It does sound like pretty high quality, especially for the bass. So it seems that they're going for that sound like the hard way, which is like the way that it's actually written and not like the aesthetic that's under it.
Yeah, but you didn't have the option then. That's kind of like also part of the point, right? In 1998, you weren't making records on a laptop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's like Pro Tools still was dog shit in 1998. Yeah. I mean, like they were probably doing this record. I mean, they probably did this on tape. That's why it sounds like it does. You know, I mean, the most modern recording in 1998 was ADAT, or you know, digital audio tape.
Yep.
So
really good.
You know,
point.
Like you know, like it's easy now to make things sound old because there's usually just a
button
plug-in
that you press.
Like, hey,
it's a VST.
Yeah, and hey, make it sound like this. Whereas in back then, you know, like they wanted that sound. Like these guys had to do it to tape. You had to get like a real, like a plate reverb or a spring reverb, like actual things, not just like, oh, hey, man, Waves made this plugin that sounds like fucking, you know, God only knows or whatever, you know. So, I mean, that's which kind of, I think makes this significantly cooler, you know, that they did the work, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Blowing bubbles out of the window, chewing bubble gum and blowing big bubbles, getting rid of all of my troubles, watching the temple. Glubba glubba in the puddles. Soap bubbles can be dreams of pie. Soap bubbles can be dreams of pie. Soap bubbles can be dreams of pie. Bubblegum panic keeps my heart from getting heavy and crying. Bubblegum panic keeps my heart from getting heavy and crying.
Dope.
I mean, I can totally relate because soap bubbles carry my dreams up as well.
Yeah, that was cool. And I like how short it was, too. They're able to like really cram in a lot of really interesting things without like filler, right? We have some people in the chat.
Yeah.
Frowning Flowers says that, is this paying homage to Joe Walsh's Bubbles there? Lol. Oh. Maybe. Maybe not. You know,
not sure.
But I think that I actually kind of want to listen to the rest of this album. I mean, that sounded really, really cool.
Yeah, I want to check it out. I've never heard of them before. I'm surprised.
Yeah, me neither. It sounds like something that you'd like, EJ.
I said it. So bubbles carry my dreams up.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a very, very cool pick by Tim Palmieri from Lotus. We really appreciate that, Tim. Up next.
I also appreciate that there's no guitar. Yeah, that's
right.
The focus of the song. Yeah,
I didn't even think about that.
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah,
Yeah. Thank you very much. So we're gonna go ahead and move on to our next one.
Yeah.
So this song is brought by John the Barber Gutwillig of the Disco Biscuits.
Yeah,
nice. Recommended this song for you to listen to. We're gonna be listening to Frank Zappa. Are you a big fan of Frank Zappa? Are you familiar with a lot of Frank's music?
I am era specific. Of Zappa. I like the Live at the Fillmore apostrophe One Size Fits All. Like that's my sweet spot for Zappa stuff. Like once it got once it got into like the late 70s and like the 80s, I kind of fell off.
Yeah, he really does have like a really big repertoire of music, and it's one of those things that it's really hard to like actually know like all of it, right? Especially when you start getting into like double digit albums, it just kind of gets like, oh, I mean, my God.
He's had like 60 records or something. I mean, it's like, it's kind of, it's a lot to, you know.
Right. So we're going to be listening to this album called One Size Fits All from 1975. Oh. And this is Frank Zappa.
I love this record.
Great. Let's go for it. It's this is Frank Zappa with Sofa Number 2 right here on Galaxy Jams Reacts.
Very, very gospel-y.
Very thick already, yeah.
Sounds huge.
It's such a huge sound.
Frank Zappa never ceases to amaze me that I can never tell where he's going.
Right.
And I absolutely love that about Frank Zappa. And his production quality, and this is great. It sounds so, so
rich.
Lush.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a weird gospel song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really like also that he's the thing with Frank Zappa is that, and like I talk about this on the show sometimes, is that he's so good at sticking by the rules, just like he's so good at breaking the rules. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he can do like such prolific things, but then like literally 1 second later, he's doing some goofy, silly shit, which, you know, you have to be like, you know, have an art degree to really understand why he did that. You know what I'm trying to say? And so and I also like how he switched to German. And the reason why he did that was because he had a fascination with the German people as he toured in Europe. And so that's so interesting how it, because the thing is like when you make a choice like that and you have like a whole, like even in like 1975, like making a record was difficult and you needed a whole team of people. And so to get a whole team of people to go ahead with, yeah, we're going to sing in German, and everyone's like, great, let's do it. I feel like it's like a really, really hard sell. And he was really good at selling his ideas to the people that believed in him, which is why he was able to like essentially do all this prolific stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And Tom, you sounded really excited when you heard that we were listening to this. When was what was your take on this? When's the first time you heard this?
Oh, first time. I dude, forever ago, man. This was one of those records, you know, that like, I probably, late 90s, maybe, you know, I think my dad was super into the Apostrophe record when I was a kid. And when Brothers Pass started and I met the keyboard player, Tom McKee, I feel like he was the one that was like, you know, had it on tape, I think, you know, it was like, oh, dude, you know, if you like Apostrophe, you should let's check out this. Yeah, you know, it's a great record. Inga Rhodes is on this, which the jam in Inga Rhodes sounds
crazy.
Just like the jam in Reba, the Fish song Reba.
Yes.
And Inga Rhodes, kind of the same jam.
Oh, wow. That's a good point.
Yeah, man, but it's a beautiful record. This is, it's interesting. The music, you know, Zappa's lyrics are always kind of like whatever. He's on his own trip, like trying to prove whatever point he's trying to prove. But musically, this record feels a lot more sentimental mm-hmm. to me, like the just purely from the composition, not what they're saying. I mean, a lot of what they're saying doesn't matter, you know. Yeah, I love this record front to back. I mean, it's all great, and I love this track.
I think
especially that... where it's going, like, right where we stopped, like the rest of this tune, it's you know, yeah, it really it gets it hits you right in the middle, you know.
Yeah, Frank Zappa is so good at taking like the most ridiculous shit, and when you listen to it, you feel like this is something that needed to be said. And I feel like when you get really complicated and you have those prog rock bands, like sometimes I'll leave a song and I'm like, that sounded like sterile, or it sounded like it was just like, why did he do that? And Frank Zappa is really, really good at taking absurd things and making it seem like really important.
Profound, yeah. That's cool. I'm just taken aback with how full this song sounds, because anytime I hear something that was made in the 70s, I don't know why my brain automatically goes, it's going to sound a little thinner. It's going to sound like something's missing. And this doesn't. It's just completely filled out, very, I guess, analog, because that's what they were using. But everything just feels very full. There's nothing that sounds like super dated to me in terms of instruments.
Yeah.
Go on. What else? What's an example of that?
Like thinness, I guess? I can't think of anything in particular, but every single time I think 70, even 80s sometimes, I'm like 80s, 70s, my brain automatically goes, oh, that's older stuff, so it's going to have this thinner sound to it. And then this is not the first time I've been surprised by it, but I've got surprised by it again, where it's just like, wow, this sounds so full. I don't know if it's the sound system I'm listening to it through, but it just sounds really lush.
Yeah, or sometimes like the way that the instruments are mixed can be like a bit like really, really apparent, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, for example, when we were listening to the song beforehand, that was made in 1998, right? And I feel like the bass sounded good and everything else kind of sounded like kind of, you know, not remarkable in terms of the sound quality. But, you know, when we threw this song on, like, I felt like I was like taking into this whole production, right? Mm-hmm. And so, cause like, I feel like a lot of people, they get caught in this like mouse race, you know, if you will, like rat race, where it's like they focus on like a snare and they will, you know, they're going to spend 50 days in a row getting that snare to sound good, right? Instead of looking at the bigger picture of like making sure it all sounds cohesive and like together.
How they work together. Yeah, exactly.
Dude, absolutely. I talk about this a lot with just my friends or my bandmates, or, you know, we just made an album with Ghostlight, and I'm currently making an album with this other band, More. And, you know, I produce all the records I make. So, you know, and trying to talk to the guys about the different ways you can make records and how they'll translate, and also how they'll last, you know. And I think things like what you were saying, Mike, about getting lost, you know, with like, hey, man, you're going to sit here and pay attention to that snare drum for you know, 2 weeks, but the track sucks. You know, like, regardless of that's the best sounding snare you ever had in your life. You know, it's the vibe, you know, like there's a reason that it's been whatever, it's been 40, 50 years, and we're still collectively as a people listening, and you know, and younger kids are still discovering the Beatles and Zeppelin and Floyd and the Stones and those albums. And it's because of the performance, you know, like this was a group of people in a room making this shit happen, not like somebody, you know,
adjusting waves on a computer, you know, to get like the wave, like, you know, perfect.
Perfection, I don't think resonates with us because we're not perfect. Like, it's not a thing. You know, that Zappa record, that's this song that we're listening to, I would venture to say, was, if not all of it, at least everything except the vocals was done live.
Yeah.
Like all of those people were in one room at Zappa's house. That's where his studio was. And they were making magic together, you know, like that's where the magic is when it's a group of people, you know. It's like playing to each other and playing to the room and, you know, creating something, conjuring something. You know, it's like if you're just micro focused on too many of the little things or zoom too far in, you're not going to see the bigger picture.
Yeah. And I think the one thing about recording back then and the bands back then, and even up through the 90s, to tell you the truth, was, you know, there wasn't like a lot of like, okay, I'm going to do the drums and I'm going to go back in and redo this mm-hmm. track and I'm going to take the best part of this track. It was like they did it live in the studio and right. they had that energy, kind of what you're talking about, Tom. They have that. It's the energy you're hearing as well, because they're all in the same room and they're all playing it together and they're all going through that experience at the same time. And that's what produces, you know, all that greatness. And also, I think back then, truthfully, you had to be on top of your game when you went into a recording studio. You know, yeah. nowadays you're like, okay, I know I can up 50 yeah. times and still get this one take that makes me sound like a superstar, you know?
There's no control Z.
Dude, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Man. You had to just be good at what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and if you weren't,
yeah, you were you, know, you were burning something else. You were burning some serious money in that place.
Especially in Zappa's band, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
And demand perfection.
I'm a firm believer that intentions and energy and mindset gets translated into a recording. I mean, mm-hmm. like the thing is like when you listen to music, like it can like make people smile, right? Mm-hmm. Or it can make people cry. And it's like, that's like an energy transfer that's like somehow like being transferred from that period of time and those people's intentions like into like what they're doing now. And like, I feel like when people focus on the micro instead of looking at the macro, that's when people get lost in the weeds and they're not really creating like what they mean to do. It's like a painter that's stuck mixing colors for 5 years to get that perfect color, as opposed to just putting whatever he feels and putting that flow out there and then just creating. Right. And so, you know, I think technology really helped a lot of people create a lot of new sounds, but it's also like bogging people down. And then also you kind of mentioned like things being like on a grid and like being quantized. Like it's hard. Like I like when you play as like a drummer, right? You can play to a click, but some, and like for some kind of music, I feel like it serves a purpose, but sometimes it's better to not. So then you have that natural like ebb and flow of like the back and forth of the band. And, you know, even mistakes can be endearing, you know, voices cracking or, you know, hitting the snare just a bit off. Like it gives things character.
Yeah, I mean, it's time is democratic, you know, or should be. It, you know, it's what the, you know, the drummer is in theory setting a pace or setting a time of a tune, but the rest of the band, where they fall on that dictates everything, you know. And exactly. Like you listen a buddy of mine does a lot of like mixing for live bands, like as far as like their live releases, right? And I've had some opportunities to have a like a session open, and you know, it's like, and these are like stadium bands. I mean, these are like, you know, and I would like solo just a guitar, or then solo just the bass, and solo just the drums, and it's like, man, this sounds fucking terrible. It sounds terrible. You're just like, I can't believe this. These are professional musicians. Nice. But then when you unsolo things and just and let the whole band go, it's perfection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. because everybody's, you know, it's what everybody's doing that makes it awesome. You know, like the Rolling right. Stones, it's like, you know, Charlie Watts is right down the fucking middle, and you got, you know, Wyman laying back, and you got, you know, Keith pushing over the time, and all of that makes that groove what it is, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not, you know, I mean, like Immigrant Song wouldn't make you feel what it makes you feel if it was to a fucking click track, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well, let's see where this song goes. You were saying it's going to go somewhere cool.
Yeah. crazy.
I love it.
It's like the diary of a madman.
Yeah, he's a very strange ending. I love it.
I love it. Love it. Love it. And that's what I love about Frank Zappa, because, I mean, I think that, you know, you say writes absurd stuff. I think he just uses the voices as a tool and as an instrument instead of worrying about really, really getting deep with his lyrics or something like that, you know?
Yeah, not worried about message as much as just using it as an instrument.
And kind of to paint a picture and to create characters, you know? I mean, a dental floss tycoon, you know, he paints a picture of that in Montana and, you know, some of the other great ones. And I don't know. I've always loved Zappa. He always holds a special place down in the cockles.
Yeah. And I think, like, for example, there's a band I really like called Phoenix, which is like this French like electropop band. Yeah. And what they do is like their words, it's kind of like word salad almost. They just sort of like, it's like words, but it's really like vowels that they just use essentially. And it's like, even though it's like random as hell, you can still like string together anything and find meaning in anything, right? Mm-hmm. You could literally take a dictionary and throw a dartboard at it and put the words together, and someone somewhere will find a way that they identify with it and what it means to them and things like that, which I think is such a beautiful thing about music, you know?
Yeah. It's all about interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite bands is this band called Stereolab. And, you know, they have some things in English, but a lot of their lyrics are in like French or German. I don't speak either of those languages, but it doesn't matter, you know, like, you know, like it's like the music's the music, you know, and all art is just a mirror, you know, it's the listener or the viewer or whatever, the participant is providing them options to see their own shit back at them. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, so it's like, I don't know what she's saying in some of these tunes, but you know, it could be fucking to the Americans. I don't know, but I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, it strikes me in a way and it allows me to project what I need to project.
Yeah. And when you were just saying that, Tom, I was thinking about the song Gangnam Style. Remember that it came out from like South Korea? That was like gigantic. And it wasn't in English, you know? And there wasn't anything particularly crazy about it. Dude had a dance. You know what I mean? Dude talked about living in, you know, an affluent suburb or whatever. And it just became like this mega hit. And I'm like, what about that song resonated with so many people that like don't speak that language and don't know anything about what he's talking about? But obviously people just really, really liked it. And you're right. It's just so interesting. Like I said, intentions, right? And thoughts and like mindset, right? It's also important when you're putting it down. It's not just the sound. It's more about like what you want to do behind it and what is that song for, which I think is just as important.
Dance tracks are a kind of a different thing, right? You know, it's like that. It's not necessarily high art, right? You know, it's like you're appealing to the visceral response of music at that, right? You're trying,
it's like your lizard brain.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You're trying, you know, like what you're trying to do is Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. You know what I mean? Like that comes on and it's just like, whether you like it or not, you're at least just like, you know,
it's a vibe.
You have to.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it just has that groove, you know, and like dancing anything groove that has like a four to floor. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like anything that has that kind of thing is, it's going to attack you viscerally more than emotionally or you know, psychologically. Like the first thing that's going to happen is that kick drum is going to make you move your ass whether you want to or not, you know? And you're like, oh, what the hell's going on? This is fucking sick, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, and you're right. You know, there's so much music. Like for example, what you were just talking about is different than like someone with an acoustic guitar and talking in terms of what part of the brain like you're activated in terms of like how you're identifying with it. And I think that that's like a really, really interesting thing that you said. It's really about like a lot about like the genre. And that's one thing about Frank Zappa is like I feel like he hits like so many different places in your brain that you have like feeling music receptors, right, to be able to like understand what he's trying to do. And I think that that's like one of the things he was going for, right?
Yeah.
And this isn't like a blanket statement necessarily, but a lot of music you could put in a kind of two piles, you know, an active listening,
right,
or a passive listening, you know,
right.
So something that's like dance track or, you know, disco or you know, EDM shit, that's passive listening. You don't need to understand the artist, you know what I mean? Or give a fuck about much of anything. It happens to you, you know, and it's like almost, it could be an escape almost, you know, whereas like active listening, I think that's when you kind of, you have to lean, you know, you lean in and you're trying to understand and connect with that person, you know, like listening to like a Nick Cave record is a very active,
right.
You know, task.
Yes.
We had a guest come on and call the former you were just talking about musical junk food or something like that before.
Yeah, where it was like, where like it was lower, just, no, it's lower like your lizard brain.
That's a little elitist. Yeah. You know, that's a little elitist, you know, to you know, it sounds like you're disparaging dance music or disparaging.
Well, there's always a place.
It's like, it's all necessary.
Yeah. You
know? Right. Yeah, there's always a place for Taco Bell at 2 a.m.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I personally like both, and for those two reasons you're talking about, Tom, where there are definitely times where I want to engage the different parts of my brain when it comes to music, especially because I also like listening to how music is put together now. As a singer, I used to not care about that as much, but now I really do. And there is a definite difference when, like you had mentioned, strange time signatures. That always catches me. As soon as I hear that, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Like, you know, what possibilities could happen with this strange time signature as opposed to 4 on the floor, which is, you know, just to move your body.
Yeah. It's either, it's like music can take you somewhere or it can keep you right where you are, but just kind of make like where you are like a bit better, you know, instead of like grabbing you and like yanking you by the collar on this whole journey, you know. Very good. Very, very profound statements from our very, very special guest, Tom Hamilton Jr. And we're going to be listening to a song pick by Tom right after this.
We're listening to The Chuckle by the band Proto Martyr. And, dude, I don't even know how I came across this band, but they just blew me away, man. It's so unnerving. They're like menacing. They sound menacing, and I love it. I fucking love it. It just doesn't sound like anything else. You know, it's like you know, like clearly they're like influenced by like Joy Division and stuff like that, but. But it's like they're not fucking around, you know. Like I feel like, you know, I don't know. It's just very exciting. I love this band. I think it's very cool. I played it for my girlfriend, and she was like, she made me stop it, and she was like, okay, look, dude, I totally understand why you like this, but it's making me feel not great, so I need you to turn.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And that made me really love it more, you know, because it's the thing I was talking about, that like it does affect you viscerally,
right?
Just the music. And then when you get into the singer's situation and what he's doing, you know, lyrically, it's so dense and there's an attitude in there that is, like I said, it's just like menacing. And it's like if the Hold Steady were, instead of being like the guy got pushed into their lockers in high school, they were the guys putting kids in their lockers. You know?
Right.
I love it. It's fucking cool, man. Let's hit play. I'm talking too much.
As a bash pit on a thrift store coat, the smell of the sauerkraut and clothes. An angry customer's face, confused cause they didn't get the way. It's something they would never allow.
It's haunting.
With a half to allow. Because this pitiful exchange will be the sole high point of our day. Chuckling till there's no more breath in my lungs, and it really doesn't matter at all.
This is the kind of music when you walk into a dive bar and there's this band playing in the corner and you're ordering a PBR and you're just like, this is freaking cool.
Yeah.
This guy, I don't even know what they look like. I don't know what they look like, but I'm imagining that this guy has to be like singing this song somewhere with his back completely turned to the audience, not even caring that they're there, right? He's that artsy guy that's just hair over his eyes, standing there, just like looking at the floor, singing this.
Right.
And the band's going off, and the guitar player's like, I'm going to be on 11, and I don't care about your volume, sir. But yes, I love the raw power of this. You know, it has that cool, like, hardcore punk kind of vibe to it with almost like I don't know how to explain his voice. It just is kind of a combination, not like as sad as Morrissey, but kind of like having that kind of like just down and just singing and the band's just rocking
that's what I was going with, like the Joy Division.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, yeah, you know, like definitely like Joy Division. And, yeah.
And it's like, I love like the change of colors that the guitar player uses,
yes,
like to go definitely from like, you know, like these like really super clean, like chorusy thing to like super heavy and like,
yeah.
It just tickles me in a lot of cool ways, you know, cause it, you know, man, when you're writing shit, as long as I've been, not like I'm like fucking forever old, but like, you know, I put out a lot of records in my career and trying to find new ways to organize 12 notes gets to be fucking daunting once you get, you know, once you're into year 20 of doing something.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So like discovering, like finding these guys, I was just like, oh man, like it has nothing to do with anything that I do. And I love it. You know?
Oh, I felt the same way when I first discovered like Primus. Right. So I was into so many different types of bands, and then Primus came out, and I was just like, what is this? I've never heard anything like this before, you know? And again, like you're saying, something, they did something completely with the chords that I didn't even think existed, you know? And the way that he plays bass, what is that? You know, it's kind of like just a new way to look at music sometimes when you discover that. And it is a very hard thing to do when you've been writing music for a long time to kind of get out of your box. But then when you hear something like this, it kind of makes you look at things a little bit differently.
Just like the idea that there's still, like, you know, it's just nice that there's still shit that I don't know what that is, you know, like, you know, like it's a refreshing thing to hear something that sounds like new information, not necessarily something that's just regurgitated, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? When the song first started playing, I was actually thinking about the band The Killers. It kind of reminded me a lot of them. But then also, it reminds me a lot of Dinosaur Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the quality of the singer's voice in Proto Martyr reflects a lot of the quality of Jay Masis in Dinosaur Jr. Because I feel when he's singing, he's almost singing like it's an afterthought, you know? Like it's like he half doesn't care about what's going on. And I always think it's so interesting the way he's doing it. When I was listening to this singer, I think that he has that kind of quality too, that when he's singing, he's like saying what he's doing, but it's like in this almost like subdued, like he's half there, half not there. Like it's like a crazy guy mumbling to himself almost, you know? But it's like, I feel like it's like really, really endearing the way that he's doing it. It's like on purpose, right? Where he's like not, he's giving it all, but in such a way that it's like on purpose sounding like he's not. And I think that that's a really, really difficult quality to find. And, you know, that's why I like Dinosaur Jr. a lot. Also, the guitar, like totally, you know, going way too loud and overpowering everything is a hallmark of Dinosaur Jr. too. And so it gives me a lot of those vibes. What do you think, Kai?
Going to 11 with that guitar. I actually really liked it a lot. The words that came to mind when the guitar part, the distorted part came in was definitely like blow your hair off, you know, like if you were in person. And that's what really caught me. But I like the insight on how he's singing and everything. I never would have thought Killers, but now that you've mentioned it, Mike, I definitely am hearing that too. Tom, you said that you just recently started listening to this, or was this something you've been listening to for a while?
Like during COVID, I found it. And you know, I this record, and they have like an EP. I forget what it's called, like the Consolation EP or something like that. And yeah, man, it's just like, it just really kind of, it just blew me away. I mean, the whole record is just like, you know, like this thing, it feels like you would think that it's building to something, you know?
Right.
Exactly. But it's not. It's exactly.
It's just making you uncomfortable.
Right.
You
know?
And
yeah.
And what he's doing as the singer, like, yeah, like, yeah, it has a very Jay Maskus thing of like, he's not trying to do anything.
Right.
He's just doing what he does. And this is what it sounds like. That's how it comes off, at least. Yeah. You know, it's like a, you know, anybody that's good at their craft, you know, they make it look or sound easy. He definitely, you know, makes it sound not easy, but he makes it sound so, it just seems so sincere, you know, that it's there's a direct line from his brain to that microphone, you know.
Yeah. And I think that when you listen to music, like, your brain wants resolution. You want like everything to be like in this pretty bow. And you're right. This band is like this song is like a slow rush.
And they're not allowing it to be resolved.
Yeah. It's like it just kind of keeps, you know, going and going. And like, your brain's like, oh, like when is this going to, you know what I mean? And, you know, but I think that when a song makes you feel so strong that you got to turn it off. And it's not because it's so loud or everything. That's like a hallmark of like, you know, these guys are really putting something that moves you, you know? And even if it moves you to not want to listen to it, at least it moves you, right? To do something. And that's, you know, kind of hard to do.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's like, it's funny. And I understand, you know, that every generation, it's like, you know, it's a new, people are finding things and finding sentiments for the first time or whatever, you know, but you know, rock music as we know it, or popular music as we know it, it's been going on for, you know, 100 years or so. And it's like a lot of times we're just talking about the same shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's like, dude, are we still, and I'm not saying this in like, I write these types of songs, but I'm just, generally, you know, it's like, are we still talking about love all the time? You know,
right?
Still, you know what I mean? Like, is that still the majority of the jumping point for things? You know, or sentimentality in general, of that one huge brushstroke that is being beat to death, and you know, so when stuff like this, or just anything that is just trying to talk about and make you feel different shit that isn't just based on being sentimental. It isn't based on the heart. You know, it's like, there are so many colors to life, you know, you know, it's like, well, let's celebrate it all. You know,
so well said, Tom. And I really agree. We also have someone in the chat, Frowning Flower, says that, we were talking about how it was a change of colors, and they agreed exactly. And they say that the swapping from diminished sounds and chords to something cleaner makes this super fun. And I agree with that too.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Let's jump back in.
Let's get right back into it. He tried to sell me on a credit card. I asked about the weather and whether his life was hard. You say your name is Laszlo. I don't think that is true.
Because you're... I know a Laszlo. This is dope. And it doesn't sound half as smart as you. I guess I'll keep on chuckling till there's no more breath in my lungs. And dope. Oof. Hell yeah, dude.
That is one tense chord
progression. Yeah, I love how they just kept opening it up. That guitarist is really, really making good use of those chords.
That tension on that last chord change, it got me. That was pretty good.
I think you broke a string.
Yeah, that was really, really fun. Good. I really, really enjoyed that, and I want to check out the rest of that album, too.
It's so good. The whole record is front to back fucking incredible, dude.
That does not sound like it came out in 2017, though. That sounds to me like it just reminds me of so much music that came out in like the early 90s that wasn't popular music, but it was definitely had its place. I saw a lot of it in clubs, and I love that kind of sound. Just for everything we've talked about, it's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that to us, Tom. That was awesome.
Hey, man, I'm glad you guys gave it a shot.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate that. And so we're going to move on to our next song. And so this song is by an artist called King Curtis. Have you ever heard of King Curtis before? I haven't.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so this is actually a fan request from Steve Kimmock for you. And Steve Kimmock said that he chose King Curtis because he's fucking great, but also because he thinks that he's been a huge influence on so many great artists. Probably a good idea to keep saying his name just out of respect for all that good music like Aretha, Dwayne Allman, Donny Hathaway, Jack Dupree, etc. It was kind of a toss-up for me today between King Curtis and Donny Hathaway, but Whiter Shade of Pale from the Fillmore is my single most listened to track of all time. Just beautiful. On a more musical, nerd musical level, this is by Steve Kimmock, he says, it's neat to see how King Curtis treats the basically 1-4-5 nature of the changes. Not so much as a chord scale or guide tones, but more like speaks a word of tonic or speaks a word of four, etc. He also says, you don't have to include that last bit in the show. It's just nerd speak. Maybe Tom will get it. Maybe not. Not sure that I get it, but there it is. All right. So
that's pretty awesome.
We're here with Tom Hamilton Jr. from Joe Russo's Almost Dead, Billy and the Kids, Ghostlight, Electron, American Babies, and Brothers Past. And we're listening to a fan request from guitar player Steve Kimmock. We're listening to King Curtis from the 1971 album Live at Fillmore West. This is A Whiter Shade of Pale right here on Galaxy Jams Reacts.
Yeah.
His phrasing and emotion in that horn, man. That was a thing of beauty.
It sounds like somebody's actual voice. It's so good. Like there's just so much emotion in it. It's great.
Yeah, the connection between him and his tool and the microphone is broadband. You know, he's just right in there. And I also, it's like all about like, that's why I think live shows are so cool, because like I said, it's like all about like the intention and the energy. And I feel like this is a really, really good example of how like all of that is captured. Like I could feel, you know, the joy of everyone that's there. I could feel the heaviness in the room, right? I could feel everyone kind of coming together and all the love. And it's just really, really hard to like really convey that in an audio, you know, setting. What did you think, Tom?
I mean, you know, to King Curtis. Yeah, it's one of the all times, man. And yeah, it's just so cool. Like the, like you're saying, yeah, the intention, you could, it just, as soon as he starts, it shoots right through you. You know, you don't have, you don't stand a chance. You
know? Yeah.
Okay.
Take me.
Here we are. You know, it like forces you to be present. You know, as soon as it starts, which is, I mean,
it's definitely an active listen.
Bet your sweet ass. It is an active listen.
What did you think, EJ?
Oh, it's incredible. You know, I mean, this, I love, you know, especially recordings from back then. I always feel like they put me right into that era, you know, they make me imagine that I'm there in that room with everybody else, especially you hear these little things in the background, like the people, oh yeah,
right, or saying, oh, like, man, yeah, Curtis, you know, yeah, like Curtis. It's great, like,
because people, you know, everybody was quiet for this, you know, in the concert, you know, and they were just like, just respectful of listening to his voice come through, and just saying little things like, oh, that's, wow, that really touched me, you know, like you could just feel their emotion along with his emotion, and it's one thing I love about live music in general. But especially with this type of live music, right? This type of genre, I've listened to a lot of this kind of stuff, and I just always really, really enjoyed the respect the audience had for the performer on stage.
It's obvious
at that time, and also just the way that they just gave themselves to the performer on stage, and were like, "Just take me on your journey. I want to be part of your journey."
Mm. It's cool, you know. I feel. And I haven't read anything to back this up, but in listening to this, I would venture to say that, you know, there's a sax solo, an alto sax solo at the end of "It Makes No Difference" by the band Last Waltz that Garth Hudson does, and I would bet $100 American that Garth Hudson was a King Curtis fan. Yeah. You know, there's that. They'll just like hear the through line of just like the phrasing and the breath work of it just feels free. Like, I know that recording, you know, like the back of my hand. So it's like hearing that. And as soon as Curtis starts here, it's like, oh man, I think I know one of your disciples, you know?
Yeah. And I also think that like it's the reason why some bands have policies where like you can't have any cell phones, right? Which is really inconvenient and really expensive to implement, right? But then it's so people can be right there with you, right? They're not having like in this recording like drunk conversations with their friends about stupid shit, or they're not like, you know, on their phone or recording like for TikTok or whatever. They're right in the game with him. And I feel like that's something that's like slowly getting more and more like people are chasing that, you know, to have that direct connection with, you know, the emotion that the person on stage is having, and then they're connecting with the audience, and it's like this whole big, you know, jellyfish essentially that's all floating around. And I feel like you know, as it gets, you know, more and more technology, it's really, really difficult to be able to do that, of course. And I love how you're right, the audience has so much respect for him. You can hear it just in their exclamations and, you know, how quiet that they get. You know, usually when I'm at a show and there's a lull, that's when everyone starts talking, you know, that's like when everyone starts to, you know, yapping with their friend or going and getting a beer or like whatever. And I really like how in this recording, when it's like a lull, that's when people key in the hardest, right? Which I think is something that hopefully it gets to become back soon.
I agree.
I couldn't agree more, man. It's you know, it's as a performer, you know, as being on the other side of the stage for that shit, you know, it's like when we're trying to really get it down and have a moment, you know, it's just like a telling thing of how vulnerability is like a scary thing for people, you know, silence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not, you know, it's like, hey, you don't have to fucking say something just because there's nothing happening. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, there's always that one dickhead that's like saying woo or whatever. And it's like, you know, we're all trying to share a moment together. That's the point of you know, especially this kind of music and, you know, like, and the things that I do where, you know, it's all about the moment. It's about, you know, that room with those people at that time. And it's just like, you know, yeah, man, shut the fuck up and just be vulnerable. It's okay. It's
yes.
okay to just to feel something.
Yeah. I think that some people like when those moments happen, they kind of like get that moment that's to themselves. And some people are like terrified of that. You know, they're terrified of like feeling something and, you know, it's just them and the music and they're in their own thoughts. And, you know, like when I'm at a show, sometimes I think about the weirdest stuff. Like I'll like be listening to some soulful part and I'll be like, you know, I wish I talked to my parents more. Or I'll think of like, you know, oh, like this bad thing that happened. And it's like all these uncontrolled things coming into my head. And I feel like some people, they get like really terrified of that, you know? And that's why they try and like do other things and like talk or like whatever to kind of escape from, you know, something that's really, really important.
I think the vast majority of people, honestly, are afraid of vulnerability of one kind or another. And actually meeting people that will embrace it is more rare than you might think. But it's funny, I never thought like the guy that's yelling woo in the background, even though we've all been there and heard it, would come from a place of someone who's just not okay with that silence. But it is absolutely what it is. It's somebody trying to make light of a very serious moment.
Right. It's like seeing a car accident and you're laughing or something. Well, not really like that, but it's like seeing something and it's like you can't like allow yourself to be on that journey, you know, because it's taking a turn that is touching a part of yourself that is maybe not seen light in a very long time, you know?
Yeah, it's like, hey, man, oh, I just came to the show to, like, have a good time and hang on my buds. And, like, I don't want to be made to feel things. You know? That's basically what it's like, you know?
Oh, my God.
And it's like, all right, dude, well, you know, okay. Maybe don't come to a show that's like this. That requires us all to be willing participants, you know?
Yeah, I just want this to be a Disney movie, you know? Like, I want to laugh and, you know, chip chop after 90 minutes, we're out. That's what I want.
One of the experiences I've ever had with that actually happening at a show where the artist stopped and had a conversation with the person was I saw Tori Amos playing by herself, just her and her piano at the Chrysler Hall in Norfolk, Virginia. And these people were talking in the front row, you know, and these two girls were talking in the front row. And she's like right in the middle of the song and she just stops and she just turns around and looks at them. And she's like, so what are you talking about?
Oh my God.
And they're like, they don't say anything. Of course, they're just like, oh. She's like, no. She goes, it must have been an important conversation. You know, you came here, everybody else is listening, and you're talking in the front row. What are you talking about?
Oh my God.
And isn't that, you know, I mean, everybody else here paid just as much as you did. I guess you just paid to come in here and talk. And this kind of stuff like this. You know, you just go ahead and have a conversation. Isn't that, it was like everybody was quiet too, right? And then she was like, okay, I guess you're done. And it went right back in where she left off. It was amazing.
Yeah. There's a time and place for everything, you know? And I feel like shows are a good place to catch up with people you haven't seen in forever. And, you know, but you can do that in the back.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Definitely do it in the back.
Yeah. Or before or after the fucking show.
Yeah.
As soon as the lights come down, shut the fuck up until the lights come up. It's pretty easy. Yeah.
Great. That's a great quote.
You should get shirts.
It just seems easy now.
Get shirts and wear them on stage to say that.
Yeah, literally. If you can see this shirt, don't talk.
It's like nobody ever told me to shut the fuck up before. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm glad I paid $25 to be here.
It's just like the fucking the jam scene can be like that a lot, whereas the people, like, they're not, they don't, the music is secondary, you know?
Right,
it's like,
well, I'll go
see my friends and
hang, and it's like a social
thing. Right. I don't even really want to go to the show, but I need to say hi to, you know, it's like, well, dude, fucking do something else, man. Maybe you guys should have a party at your house and you could all talk then. Like, why do you got to come and, you know?
Call them on the phone.
You know,
call them on the phone like, during the show.
Let's get the rest of this back, eh?
Let's check it out.
Guthers taking me to church piano. I love how quiet he is.
Every note until the very end, he was just slaying it.
Yeah, when we were deep into it, I was like, I could hear him do this like for like 5 more hours and be stoked.
Oh yeah,
yeah, beautiful. It was really good.
Yeah, that was a great fan pick from Steve Kimmock.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Steve, for recommending that amazing song for us to listen to with Tom. EJ, what do we got next?
Well, we've got a song by John Lennon and the Plastic Ono Band. This is an interesting tune I've always liked that John Lennon did, and it was after the Beatles broke up, and of course there is this famous feud between him and Paul McCartney, and it had a lot to do with the business, and they had Apple Records together, and had to do with the business and kind of the split of the Beatles, and it was kind of a song that John Lennon wrote at the height of his feud with Paul McCartney after the Beatles broke up. Each line of the song is an attack on some aspect of Paul McCartney's life or music at the time. For instance, the line, "Everything you've done was yesterday, since you've gone, and just another day," refers to Paul's song Yesterday with the Beatles and his first solo single after outside the Beatles called That's Another crazy. Day. Yeah. So it was kind of like a message.
A diss track.
A message back and forth. And they were kind of doing it back and forth in a way. So this is a really cool group of people. It actually has George Harrison on slide guitar, and Alan White on drums, Klaus Voormann on bass, and some other great players like Andy Davis and Rod Linton and Ted Turner, and John Tout, and also Nicky Hopkins, additional piano parts. So just a really cool view. At one point, Lennon was interviewed about it, and he said, you know, "I used my resentment against Paul to create this song, sibling rivalry," because it was a creative rivalry. It wasn't a vicious vendetta, but I felt resentment. So let's check it out. Is How Do You Sleep, John Lennon from the Plastic Ono Band, here on Galaxy Jams Reacts.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So Sergeant Pepper took you by surprise.
How great and funky is this, right?
Yeah.
What a great song. And then, again, we were talking about it earlier, those guys just playing in the studio, right? They're all just sitting in one room, just playing the song, and it sounds like freaking gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then also the intentions behind it, you know, the feelings that are propelling the song.
It's a very strong intention behind
it. And even if you don't know what's going on, you can still feel like something. You know, something propelling it. And like you said, Tom, you know, some people that propellant's love, you know, and some propellant is, you know, hate or anger or, you know, sadness or like whatever, whatever color it's going to be. And I think that, you know, to do like a straight up diss track, right, like this is a very, very rare, you know, energy behind a song indeed. You know, not a lot of people make a song that actually sounds good. It's like literally dunking on someone unless they're like a rap god or something like that.
I mean, you know, I especially these guys. There were things like, what is it? I think it's Love Minus Zero, the Dylan song, you know, was that was basically like a diss track to John Lennon, you know, like, you know, Lennon put out a Norwegian Wood, and Dylan was just like, okay, this guy is ripping off my shit, you know, and you know, Love Minus Zero is like his response to that, you know, kind of thing. I mean, I think people talk to each other through their songs back then for sure. But like you were saying, the intention, I think, is the thing that matters the most. you know, I always talk when I'm in the studio, I always talk to whoever players I'm with about intention. It's all, you know, it's all a personal thing, right? Like whatever that player is bringing, it can come from wherever it comes from, but it has to be there, you know, like it has to be, it's got to mean something to you, what you're doing. It doesn't have to necessarily mean, you know, like what Klaus is playing. Maybe he's not thinking, fuck you, Paul McCartney,
right?
You know, but he is thinking like in the moment and he's bringing something into what's going on, and there's intention, there's purpose. It's just, you know, and yeah, man, it's like, that's the thing. That's the variable. It's the intangible thing about recording like that, you know, with just people in a room, you know, like you never know what's going to happen. And the thing is, you know, when you record 10 takes of a track, the one that is the one, everyone knows it. Everyone in the room knows it when they listen back. They're like, oh, this is it. Because that thing that you can't describe or teach or make a plugin out of is just happening. And everybody's like, oh, this is it.
You know? And I think the thing that's cool about this song is it is John's intention to send a message. But if you didn't know that and you listened to the song, you could fit this probably into a relationship you had with somebody.
Right.
You could fit this into like a breakup with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever. You could fit this song into anything. It is really the sound of the song, like we were saying, has that sound of like, yeah, you know, it's like funky and fun, but it also has that kind of dark side to the sound of it. And it's the way they're playing it, too. Yeah. So I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, and also, like, when it comes to improv, I think that that's, like, especially important. I read this interview or something like that with, like, Trey Anastasio, and he was saying that sometimes when he's jamming with Fish, he can tell, like, how their day went, you know? Interesting because especially when you start going into improv, it's, like, so many things just come out because to do improv, you have to really relax, you have to really listen, and you have to really, like, you know, take your time and open yourself up and... That can have like a lot of, you know, other effects. Like, I feel like this is like one of those songs where like something that's happening where even if it's inadvertent, it's giving it a quality that's like so endearing and like so many people really, really like. And a lot of the times that's how it works, where it's like something you're not even necessarily going for is the thing that makes it. You know what I mean?
Happy accidents.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
And just thinking about just going back to just this actual song, John's voice.
Oh yeah,
is really good. So there's amazing.
Nothing like it, yeah, there's nothing like it.
He's just he can sound, you know, really, really smooth. Sometimes he can sound, he can put the grit on it, and that's one thing I liked about the Beatles is they had the way that they would just change their voices for different songs and the way they experimented, even just with the way they recorded and everything like that, and just how they would put themselves in the moment of whatever message they were trying to get out or whatever feeling they were trying to get out, and they would augment themselves and really, really try to sound different on a lot of different songs. Because, you know, he sounds completely different on this song than if you listen to like Woman or you listen to, you know, Norwegian Wood, like you said, like completely different. Like if you didn't, you could still tell it's him if you're really a big giant fan of the Beatles. And but if you had somebody who didn't really know the Beatles and you played those three songs, they might not even guess it was the same person
or the same band.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Beatles, it was, you know, they had four singers, but they had 20 different voices. You know?
Right.
And that's why they were the Beatles and we're not.
Yeah. Right. Let's get back into it.
They're all just chilling, like friends that are just relaxing in the studio together. A pretty face may
last a year or two. Yeah, I really love the grit that he's putting in his vocals. It's so good.
A sound you make it.
getting it with the roads.
Doing a clean right there. That was a clean pass. They're just nailing it. It's like perfect.
Okay. Do you think we should listen and see what we're doing or what?
That's like exactly what we were all just talking about.
Yeah.
I like in the chat, Frowning Flower says, what is so odd to him is the influence that Paul and John obviously had on each other. At any second, I feel could be listening to Wings until I hear John sing or something else quintessentially Lennon happens. I agree. I mean, the thing is, they grew up together, you know? I mean, they were really young when they first met and started making music. I think they were 13, 14 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. You know, they were like best of friends for a long time. And it was a really, really cool relationship that they had. I mean, even George Harrison was in there early, too, and Ringo was one of the last ones to get in there. But their relationship and their songwriting relationship and the way they worked together was one of a kind. You know, that's what makes this song, if you know all that kind of stuff, you know the history, it makes this song like, wow, you know. Because he even says, you know, how do you sleep at night, brother, right? So, and everything he's saying in the song, too, he's referencing things from the Beatles and Beatles songs and moments that they had together, you know, and he goes, you must have learned something through all those formative years, you know? So it was just really cool.
There's an outtake of that where he sings, how do you sleep, you cunt?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, yeah.
I was waiting for him to do that. He didn't, but this wasn't one of those versions.
Yeah, that was probably the other take.
That was a great share, EJ. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. And we got another pick from our very special guest, Tom Hamilton Jr., right after this.
Okay, so we're listening to Nights on Broadway by the Bee Gees. I recently watched the documentary that was on HBO about these guys and fell down the rabbit hole. And, you know, like I grew up, my parents both loved the early Bee Gees, like pre-disco stuff. I think a lot of the boomers were of the opinion of, you know, the early Bee Gees were amazing, but the disco stuff was kind of lame, you know, or whatever. But, you know, I think all of it's pretty great. You know, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I think generally it's all pretty great. And this tune, I didn't know this song prior to my watching of this documentary, and it just fucked me up. I was like, dude, you got to be kidding me with these guys. You know, it's just, they're just fucking weird and cool. You know, they did something just, I think, unique with it's kind of like the thing of we're talking about how like dance music can be junk food,
mm-hmm.
but like these guys were real dudes, you know, like these were real songwriters. These weren't, you know, just like, this wasn't bullshit. These guys really knew what they were doing. And these guys were great at writing melody and
right.
And they just applied it to fucking disco because yep. that's what was going on at the time.
Yep.
And, yeah, but anyway, this tune is just—it's just fucking hilarious, man. It's just—it's so good, and like the falsetto shit at the end is like, I think it's just awesome. It's a great tune.
Well, let's get on into it. The Bee Gees, Nights on Broadway, here in Galaxy Jams Reacts.
Yeah, I think this is where they debuted this logo, too, was this album.
It's just like the soundtrack to, like, cocaine.
Yeah,
that's what it's like the Bee Gees are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hot logo, though, for real. I like it.
Hell yeah.
Standing in the dark, where your eyes couldn't see me. Well, I had to follow you, though you did not want me to. I won't stop my loving you.
I love their harmony, it's so good.
Like, it's so fucked up, dude.
Oh my god, I love that synth.
Yeah, it's so sick.
I won't stop my love in you. I can't stay away. Living it all on the nights of Broadway. Singing them love songs. Singing them straight to my heart song. Living it all on the nights of
amazing. I love the Bee Gees. Do you know a lot about the Bee Gees?
My dad really likes them a lot.
My parents are huge fans of the Bee Gees, too. But
I don't know a lot of their music. Go on, Kai.
No, I've been listening to them a lot more lately because one of the singers in our band really loves them because he grew up with them, too. So we've been hearing. I've actually never heard this song before, and it is hot. Like, it has everything.
It's sick.
It's so good. Like, it has the tension notes and the chords, like those epic tension notes, and then it has some really thick harmonies, which, again, said in the beginning, I dig it. So really, really cool pick, Tom.
Are you guys looking at the visuals also?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't get an undershirt on these fucking guys. Yeah. Look, this is what. Hey, we're the Bee Gees. We have fucking falsettos and chest hair.
That's for sure.
That's what we're providing to the party.
And probably mountains of cocaine, I'm sure.
Yeah, dude. It's just like, hey, wear that jacket, but I'm not wearing anything underneath it.
Yeah. I was about to say hilarious. when it was down at the chest hair and coming out, you didn't see people's faces. At first, I thought it was a picture of Mike. He has a chest hair like that too.
Nice. So. Yeah, and I really, really like how this song, it snuck up on me. You know, at first it sounded like deep and dirty, and I'm like, oh, okay, like they're getting deep, you know. But then the more like the song kept going on, the more I'm just like, oh my god, like they're taking me to this like Bee Gees place, you know, where it's like this hip happening groovy like thing, and it's like I really, really like a band that can make me feel, you know, like a certain aesthetic, like always, like I can count on them to do certain things, right? And I feel like they're a really, really good band that you can throw on for a party. And I feel like they're just, I know that they're like world famous and everything, but especially nowadays, I feel like they're criminally underrated.
Yeah, there's a lot of pushback because of the disco thing, you know, I think. And, but yeah, man, they were incredible songwriters. They really were. They were great songwriters. And, you know, if you go prior to this record, like before they got into the disco stuff, I mean, you know, songs like To Love Somebody and Massachusetts, they're just great fucking songs, man. And the fact that they're able to do that thing where they're brothers, so their voices are all pretty identical.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And to be able to do a thing where they're all on the same melody and then they fan into those fucking huge chords. It's just, man, there's not a lot of singing groups that are, that can do that. Right. You know, I mean, it's the Beatles, CSN, the Bee Gees, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a pretty short fucking list of bands that can sing like that. That can just, three people can walk up to a microphone and just make
do
that.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they have that signature Bee Gees falsetto like tone to their voice that even though other people are singing in falsetto, singing super high notes, you know it's the Bee Gees as soon as that tone comes in.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm. They were like a singing group, like a family singing group, and they were doing it when they were really young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, and one reason why their voices are kind of melded together. Mm-hmm. You know, they know. They can easily like do the harmonies off each other because they've just been doing it for so long, you know, by this point.
Yeah. Something about having, and I talk about this sometimes, like having family members in your band is like cheating because it's like, it's a lot harder to break up because it's easy to like have your life path be on the same as like someone that's related to you. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's an easier ask for you to like live your life on the road or like be in this band together. And then also it's like, again, it's like you have like the blood relative thing where it's like they probably like telepathically communicate together, you know, like while they're performing and while they're writing and things like that, able to put things together. And you know, man, three brothers just together in a band that all can sing and all can write, and it just wasn't fair.
No one stood a chance.
You know, I'm jealous.
It's great. Mike's jealous. You shouldn't be jealous of the hair. You got more on them.
Let's get to this bridge, dude. They're about to break it down for us.
Let's do it.
All right, come on.
Take me.
Chest hair.
all of it.
Got the slow vibrato from the 80s. I love it.
So awesome.
This falsetto so good. Even if it takes a lifetime, takes a
lifetime. On the nights on Broadway, singing them blues songs, singing them straight to my heart. Baby, it all. On the nights on Broadway, singing them sweet.
They just know their place. Like each of the voices knows exactly where to go, where they each hit like a different registry that kind of like makes this like whole wall of just like,
man,
you know, going to church.
Very
so good. What an awesome pick.
Wow.
Yeah, that was an epic one, Tom. We really, really appreciate
thanks,
it. I know.
And it's kind of the opposite proto-monitor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. You're right. And because like, I think in so many different ways, and, you know, we really, really appreciate it. And we know that we told you that this show would be about 90 minutes. But do you have time for just one more, Tom?
Let's do it. Let's do one more.
Great. Thank you very much. So this next one, actually, EJ, why don't you talk about it?
Oh, you want me to talk about it? All right. This next one is a fan request from Dennis McNally. He's biographer and publicist for The Grateful Dead. And he wanted you to check out this tune from Gladys Knight and the Pips from their album Imagination from 1973. This is from Dennis to you. This was the song running through my mind when I read your request to pick a song for Tom Hamilton Jr. It is, of course, a great song in the Motown tradition. The call and response integration of lead and backup is about as good as it gets. Let's check it out. Gladys Knight and the Pips.
He is absolutely fucking right.
Yeah, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Midnight Train to Georgia. Let's check it out here on Galaxy Jams Reacts.
Her voice is so sweet. He couldn't
make it. So he's leaving the life he's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. What's left of his world? The world he left behind. Not so long.
I like that.
That live without him in mind.
World is his and hers alone.
He kept
epic.
Dreaming.
Ooh, that someday he'd be a star.
A superstar, but he didn't get far.
Oh
but
my
he
God.
Found out the hard way. The dreams don't always come true.
I totally agree about the call and response to this song. It's so great. Yeah. It's like sometimes they set her up to sing what she's going to sing. Sometimes they back her up sing what she just said.
Or sometimes they just do like a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're literally like, this is like a textbook in how to do that style. They're exercising like so many different ways to do it. What do you think, Kai?
Yeah, it was very unpredictable in a good way. Like it wasn't just set up with pattern. And I really like how they did things like the hoot stuff that sound like the train and everything. Yeah. That was really cool. It was a good pick. I really like it so far. And I love Gladys Knight's voice. It's so good.
It's a treasure.
Yes.
What did you think, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, dude, this is, this fucking song, man. I mean, I've probably listened to this song 1,000 times in my life. It's just everything, just the way the recordings of all this Motown stuff, it's just like, it's on par with like the Beatles of just like the way this shit sounds and the intention that everyone brings into the room.
Right.
It's fucking crazy. I mean, like Motown is its own genre. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, which is fucking crazy. And it's really, I think it's the only genre that I've never met somebody that didn't like it.
Yep.
You know, I've never met anybody that was like, like when like Marvin Gaye came on, somebody was like, "Oh, turn this shit off." You know what I mean? You're like, you know what I mean? It's like not true. A thing that happened. You know, no. Midnight Train of Georgia is going to come on. Nobody's going to get upset about Midnight Train of Georgia. You know, everybody's going to be like, "Oh, yeah, this fucking tune." You know, like it's remarkable. You know, I mean, it's again, it goes to that thing of real talent. And real intention in what everyone brought to the table. It's just this is the shit that our grandkids will still be listening.
Mm-hmm.
This.
Epic. Tasteful fade out.
Yeah.
Man, what a great sweet. Pick. That was awesome.
Yeah. Straight up classic. And yeah. I love how it's like so sweet, but so funky and so sassy.
Yeah.
Like all at the same time.
A beautiful song.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a great pick from Dennis McNally, the biographer and publicist for The Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just had so much fun listening to music together. Thank you so much for being on the show, Tom. Yeah. We really appreciate it. And we hope that you had fun. Guys,
thank you. Of course, this was a great experience, a really unique angle at doing stuff like this. Like, way to go, guys. I really love it. I think it's super cool.
Thank you.
I'd be back. I'd love to do it again.
Thank you so much. That's... We do hope that if we work our very hardest that we can circle back with you in 4 or 5 months to see how we can do the best job we can to listen to music again together.
We'll definitely do it.
Yeah, you're awesome. This was great. I want to do a good job of thanking my lovely co-host, EJ.
Oh, thank you from the lovely bottom of my heart.
Want to do a good job of thanking you, Kai.
Thank you.
Want to do the best job of thanking myself. And then I also want to thank our very, very special guest, Tom Hamilton Jr., for listening to music together. And I want to thank everyone that's in the chat. Yeah. And I want to thank everyone that's listening. And we will see you next time right here on Galaxy Jams Reacts. See you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.